This is episode 59 of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. In this episode, I had the opportunity of talking with Eric and Emily Orton of Fezziwig.com and the authors of the upcoming book, Seven at Sea. Eric and Emily took the amazing adventure of taking their five children on a boat, sailing around the world, sailing for a year. And this is my interview with them talking about what inspired them to take such an adventure and how they were able to overcome their fears and what their expectations and hopes were of doing such a grand adventure. And so there are a lot of themes that arose from this discussion about trial and error, about opportunity costs, about faith, about, you know, struggle and the importance of those things that really do strengthen and bind our families together. So I hope you enjoy this awesome interview. I had a great time talking with them. They are overseas, so there are some segments where I had to cut out some things, but because of interference, but you still kind of get a, you know, you can kind of hear a little bit of what that interference sounded like. So it all is still pretty cohesive and coherent, but just be aware that there is a little bit of a digital interference with the audio, but otherwise it sounds good. So enjoy this awesome discussion with Eric and Emily. They are an inspiration, and go check out their website, Fezziwig.com, and also if you spell out the word seven at sea, you can pre-order their book, which comes out in March. Eric Orton is an Emmy Award-winning writer and former Broadway tour manager. He was raised in Germany and the suburbs of Washington, D.C. He has produced various musicals off-Broadway. His original music, Berlin, won an Emmy Award as well as a SENA Gold Eagle Award and Bronze Telly Award. In 2018, he climbed El Capitan, the tallest granite cliff in the world, got scuba certified, and learned to surf. Emily Orton is a former English teacher turned homeschool mom. She speaks and writes about living with purpose. Her writing is featured in Dare, Dream, Do by Whitney Johnson. Curiosity has led Emily to become a rock climber, a sailor, a scuba diver, a world traveler, and most recently, a surfer. Eric and Emily continue to learn, grow, and travel with their five children. They love to gig as a family band when their two oldest children are home from college, and they occasionally post music videos on YouTube. They are currently traveling Europe by sailboat and VW van with their younger children. They blog together at Fezziwig.com and make their home in New York City. Welcome, Eric and Emily. So happy to have you guys here.
Thank you, Jody. It's a privilege to be with you.
Thanks for having me.
So excited. So I just love what you guys are doing, that you guys are, and what you're doing is so eclectic in what you guys are doing. And I think that that's so cool. Like all the things that you guys are doing is just really awesome. And so you recently wrote this book called Seven at Sea, and you gave me a chance to look through it a little bit. And I'm just so excited to share with my audience what you guys have created and what you guys have done with your path. First of all, though, like tell us a little bit about what inspired you to get on a boat and sail a boat for a year. What was your inspiration?
I'll let Eric start with that question because it started with him.
Okay. What started was trying to rebuild in a certain way. We'd just come out of a low point in our family life. I had a small business that had failed, and it failed the week our fourth child, our only son, was born. And I took this job that I hated just to pay the bills. It was downtown working nights. And, you know, I was kind of just doing the grind in a rut, and I would take these dinner breaks and walk along the river and the Hudson River in the evenings. We lived in New York City. So these were the Hudson River and Statue of Liberty. And I would see these sailboats going up and down at sunset. And it just felt so far away and unreachable. And I just kind of was longing for something better in my life. And I would talk about it with Emily on the phone. And ironically, there was this sailing school right downstairs where I worked. I could you know, I walked past it every day, and it felt very far away because that seemed like it was something that other people did. It wasn't part of how I was raised. My parents never sailed. I never sailed. And it felt like it was something that was for rich people or some kind of just, you know, you had to kind of be in a club to do that sort of thing. And then I just thought, you know, I want to learn more about this. And Emily really encouraged me. And for me, it was a little bit of a leap to go from being dockside onto, you know, onto the pontoon where the school was located and just walk into this place and saying, hey, what is this and what's involved here? And I did. And the people were really nice. I was there for, you know, maybe 15 minutes because I had to get back to work, but they gave me some good information and I shared it with Emily, and that was the beginning, you know, and it grew from there, and we had to kind of rummage around to make taking sailing lessons work. I had to work another job so we can have enough money to do it. And we had to have a minimum of 4 people to do the class. And with my unusual schedule, I ended up recruiting Emily and our 2 oldest kids, our daughters who were how old?
9 and 11.
9 and 11 at the time.
And I might interrupt here if it's all right.
Yeah.
Please. When he says I encouraged him. I was like, great. If that's something you want to do, you should go do that. I 100% support you in doing your thing. And when he couldn't find anybody else to take the class and he wanted us to join in, I was like, oh, great.
What have I agreed to?
How did I get into this? But I wanted him to be able to do it. And again, I thought, well, I can't remember how many weeks it was, 4 weeks or 6 weeks. I'm like, this is a limited time thing. It'll be, you know, over before summer's over, and extend my goodwill for this next limited time. Like, I could be involved for this small portion to take that first step. But as I've learned since then in my life with Eric Orton, usually gathering a little information or taking a few small steps ends up leading all of us on an amazing adventure. So I encouraged him and ended up kind of getting
sucked into it as a family.
Involved as well.
Well, I think that's so interesting too, because it's like, I think sometimes a lot of us have like a wish or that we see something like that and never take action on it. And so it's interesting that, you know, you had the courage even just to the first few steps. And then you never know where those steps are going to lead you. But sometimes we don't even take those first few steps towards those goals or towards these ideas. And so nothing ever comes of it. So it sounds like then you didn't actually have like a long-term goal at the beginning, but because you started taking those steps, it started to lead you down that path, which is inspiring of itself.
It was something that I think evolved over time, because after we had taken sailing classes and gotten through our basically 101 class, and we sailed one time with the whole family, which was a crazy chaotic experience that is one of the early chapters in our book.
It wasn't pretty.
There was nothing smooth about our sailing. We want to sail as a family. We did. We went out one time on a boat. And it wasn't until probably a year or so after that we kind of thought, I thought it would be really wonderful to sail as a family for a long period of time and just go away and get away and just be us. And so, yeah, it was definitely an idea that evolved and progressed as we went down this path, and it wasn't sort of born fully formed at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, I like something that you wrote in your book here, and I want to read this excerpt from the book. It says it on page 29, and he says that, this is Eric writing, he says, I got good at bracing for failure, but not so good at allowing success. And then you say, I think it's important to manage risk, but to not acknowledge the vast array of positive outcomes was to ignore half the reality of the situation. Positive possibilities are unlimited. In taking a risk, I want to acknowledge the worst case scenarios, but I couldn't stop there. What were the potential best case scenarios that I'd give up if I didn't go for it? What was the risk of not going? Looking at the full picture includes answering that question, what could go right? I loved that part because it was like to think of something that is a dream or a desire or, you know, something that we go, that sounds really scary. It sounds really risky. But you took it from the perspective of what could go right. What is something that we could gain from this situation? And I think from the perspective of family culture, we go, oh, I don't want to disrupt what's already comfortable here because we're comfortable, but yet nobody's growing and nobody's getting along and nobody's really, you know, we're not establishing any real values or traditions here or anything like that. And so I love that you took it from the perspective of what could we gain. And so tell us more about that, how you came to that conclusion, and maybe go into a little bit about what you did gain.
Well, I love to speak a little bit about what could go right. I was really rooting for that to be the title of this book. It's got a perfectly good title. But Eric talked about how he was at a low point because of his business and doing a job that he didn't like. So he was spending a lot of hours wishing he was somewhere else. I think on the flip side, because I was home with the kids, it was like we lived two separate lives, right? He was doing his work thing for the bulk hours of his day, and I was doing family and homeschool for the bulk hours of my day. And just to what you were saying, we were part of a community. We were part of some great co-ops. We had wonderful friends. Mm. We had routines. So it felt like a sacrifice to give up some of those things where we were really happy and we were really comfortable. But my daughter had brought home this book for me to read from the library by Donald Miller called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. And I think the subtitle is something about how to live a better story. And one of the things that he talked about inside the book was about the memories that we make. And when we have unique memories, they stand out to us. And it's almost like a way that we can expand time, I guess. Because if you think of when you're doing a routine, which I love routines, I have lots of great things to say about routines. But sometimes when you're in a routine, those memories all collapse together. And then you think, where did my month go? Because all the cylinders are hitting, it kind of moves by really quickly and you're not quite sure what happened with life. And that specifically idea from that book really stood out to me as a reason to go. Two things: one, that we could create distinct memories, and two, that we would experience new challenges together. Because Eric would say, hey, whenever I was in a show in high school or college, I would always feel so bonded to the other performers because we'd been through something together. Or when I had my climbing buddies and we went on a rock climbing trip, same thing. We'd been through something together. And we felt like we wanted to go through something together as a family. And it turned out in the end that we were right, that it did create new memories. Okay. We went through lots of challenging things, and our family relationships were galvanized through that. Even now, I tell my kids, even after somebody reads this book, they're still going to have been there. It's not like we're giving away all our family culture by sharing our stories. We'll still have that same point of reference that we all look back to. And maybe we took away different things from it, but we were all connected at the experience level. And so that to me was worth it. That to me is why when Eric said, hey, I think it would be really cool to have our whole family on a boat together, like live on a sailboat for a year, and you wouldn't have to pack every time we moved, you would just be able to live in your home. I'd be there full time and we could both be parenting the kids together. It was like we were going to share the same life, and that came with plenty of challenges because it was different than what we'd been doing. But I think that was, for me, the biggest what could go right. The biggest what could go right is that our family would galvanize, and I feel like that really happened.
Yeah, I think the reason most of us are hesitant to do something like this is because because we worry about all the things that could go wrong.
Yeah.
We get afraid of, I mean, from my perspective, I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'm in my 30s. I'm going to quit my job. I have five kids. We're heading into what I believe are usually the most expensive years of parenthood, where you're launching your kids, they're going to college, possibly, you know, that where they're kind of in between where you buy all their clothes for you, for them. As somebody who feels responsible for providing for my family, I think, well, if I quit my job now, will I get another job when I need it? Will anybody want to hire me? Will they think that I'm flaky and irresponsible because I just quit and took off and did this thing? And so we have all these fears that pile up, and they start to get in the way of all the good things that could happen, things that I was describing. And so because it's really easy, and we were just writing about this and talking about this today, it's really easy to imagine all the things that could go wrong. And it's really hard to imagine all the things that could go right, because it requires a lot of imagination, because there are so many good possibilities, but it's easier to imagine the downside because we know it all. We've experienced, we know how we got to where we are now. We know how we moved into this house or this apartment, or how I got this job, and the work to get the degree, or, you know, we know all those things and we know how they can unravel, but we don't know how things can spiral upwards in a beautiful way because we've never seen it happen before. And if we can open ourselves up, the hood of that happening is just as good, if not better, than all the things that can go wrong and the things that we're afraid of.
Well, I think it's natural to want to look at what could go wrong because you like want to prepare yourself. It's like a natural part of our self-preservation is how to, you know, want to be prepared or how to like protect yourselves and things like that. And so to do something that you know has a lot of risky potential, it's like, and it's natural to want to like recoil from that in a lot of ways, you know? Go ahead.
One idea I want to put out there is this idea of, it's a business idea, which is opportunity cost.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, say to do this, the cost of it is I lose out on the opportunity to do that. And, you know, kind of extracting that from a business standpoint into a home standpoint, say, well, if we're going to stay where we are and we're going to continue on this very nice, comfortable treadmill that we've set up for ourselves, we have to acknowledge that there's all this other wonderfulness out there that we can be missing out on if we don't try for it.
Yeah.
You know, living a life of good, better, best. We can have the good, but we know that if we just stick with the good, we're missing out on the opportunity for better or for best. But it's scary to go from good to better or for best, because it means having to risk the possibility of losing something good.
Yeah.
Which is,
would you say that what helped you and propelled you towards the better was just a little bit of, well, I think there are at least three factors. Knowledge, right? You had to learn, you started learning about sailing. You started learning about the possibilities. So getting rid of some ignorance is a way to start, you know, because a lot of things, I think a lot of times we look at other people in situations we think are better and we think, I don't even have a clue where to start to get to there. Mm-hmm. But you've already talked about how you just started and that helped you on that journey. And then I think it takes a lot of faith to go, well, I'll just let go and see where it takes me. And just unity, I think. The third thing is probably support. You know, I think that there's has to be a lot of support in knowing that you don't have to do this all by yourself, and that you brought this idea to your family and saying, I think we could do this. And then they have to, you know, come together and say, yeah, we support you and let's do it. So
I think that's really true, Jody. We the support, the knowledge, and the faith all went together to make this happen. And what happened over time, not all of a sudden, but over the course of a handful of years. And actually as we were gaining knowledge and gathering information and looking for other people who were doing this same thing that we could sort of watch and see what they did and what we liked about it, that desire continued to grow in us as we saw it, instead of like, you know, be repelled by what we saw. We were like, no, we love that. We love that. So we kept moving towards it. And one day when we were talking about this and our big ideas of this unconventional thing that we wanted to do together, our oldest daughter, Karina, who was 14 at the time, she said, are you actually going to do it? Or are you just talking about it? Do you really have the guts to do this thing? And I feel like that was like a mini turning point for us, because yes, we were moving in that direction. We'd taken educational classes. We'd been learning about what to look for in a boat to buy, but she was, I mean, she has a real, teenagers have a really high like hypocrisy radar. And yeah. She wanted to know, are you going to practice what you preach or what? And one of the things that would have been an opportunity cost was that we wanted to show our kids, not just tell our kids, yeah, you can go for something. And definitely as they watched us, they saw that it took a lot of persistence and faith. And, but that, you know, inter-family support with, you know, when Eric was getting cold feet, I'd be like, no, no, we can do this. And when I was like, I'm not so sure, he's like, no, it'll be great. And then we, you know, maybe weren't moving as quickly as seemed good. Our kids would jump in, and not that they were all 100% stoked to leave their friends behind and, you know, things like that. But they were like, let's stop talking about it and make something happen. And I was actually speaking to that daughter who's now a senior in university, and she was talking about a project that she's going to be helping somebody with. And she's like, I just said to him, are you actually going to do this? And I was like, that should be your t-shirt, like your quote. This is a thing that you're really good at. Like, you really believe in reliability. You care about doing what you say you'll do. And you say, are you actually going to do this or what? And I really appreciated all of that support. I think it did take a lot of faith.
Yeah. Well, and something that I have been speaking to lately a lot on the podcast, and just something I've been thinking a lot about lately, is how like it's not so much about the situation or even the decisions that we make as it is what we do with those decisions and those situations that matters. And that was from a talk that Dieter Uchtdorf gave in January of this year called The Adventure of Mortality. And I think it really applies to this situation, because like with opportunity cost, you can sit back and go, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And you weigh out the costs and you weigh out the expense, you know, the risks and things. But ultimately, it's not so much about what you don't know, because you don't know what the outcome is going to be. It's about what you do with the decision in the end that matters. And so it's like, you could have gotten on that boat and been like, well, this is a disaster, but well, what are we going to do with it anyways? We're here, you know, or whatever. Whatever you chose, you choose what the outcome is going to be. And so that's what's inspiring to me, is that you chose the thing that was kind of the higher risk. But at the same time, was it? Because if you stayed in your comfortable situation where you're unhappy and you're, you know, you're going through the motions of living a comfortable life, but then in the end going, wait, are we really as bonded as maybe we could be if we had just done something else that could have strengthened us more? It's really about what you do with the decision that matters more.
And I think one of the biggest fears that most of us struggle with, certainly myself, is they're fairly intangible. I think one of the things that holds a lot of us back from doing things that we want to do in life is we're worried what other people are going to think. Mm. We're worried about looking like idiots or being embarrassed. And I think, I mean, going back to what you were saying about how sometimes you just don't know where to start. You know, you might see something and you like the idea of it, but you just don't even know where to begin. And I think we were definitely in that situation. But I think it's, you have to not be afraid to belly flop. And we were able to overcome our fear of going broke and maybe dying, although that wasn't really, you know, we tried to look at all the possible downsides. And I think the hardest one was the fear of embarrassment. You know, what if we do this thing that whether we like it or not, it's going to end up being fairly public. And if we completely belly flop, it's going to be embarrassing. And that's hard.
One more time. You know, say embarrassing one more time because it broke up.
It could be embarrassing and that's hard. You know,
wanted to drive that home that's really the biggest one. Embarrassing. Well, it like broke up and it drew it out. And anyways,
you do like a max headroom, embarrassing.
There you go. but you're absolutely right. I think that's, you know, one of the things, like if you listen to anything that Brené Brown, any of her books or anything, you know, there's the one, I think it's Daring Greatly, where a man comes up to her after her speech about being vulnerable. And he goes, "You see that my wife and my daughters over there, they would rather that I die on my white horse than see me come down and be vulnerable to them." And it was like really heartrending to hear that, because it's like, oh my gosh, it's so true that in our culture at large, we would rather die at our desks than be exposed to the world, or, you know, to expose ourselves to our failures or, you know, these experiments. And that's a shame. You know, yeah. we would rather die on the court side of our kids' soccer game than have them say, "I hate soccer," you know, things like that or whatever. And that's a shame. We've got to be able to be more intentional about what we truly value. And so the comes back to this question for you though, and then is, you know, what were your values then that you wanted to instill in your kids by taking this adventure?
I think one of the first values that we had in place was that we wanted our family to be the most important unit to us, that we cared more about our family than we cared what other people thought about our family. And I think we, as a family, we valued experiences over stuff, possessions or whatever that may be. And so that's where we put our actions. We did acquire a boat in the process, but we sold it. And the bottom line was the guiding principle was having experiences over stuff, having experiences as a family. That was one of our values. For me, I thought the kids having all that access to their dad was going to be invaluable. They spent so much time with me, which I love, but they were always getting my one perspective. And as much as we try to be unified, part of what we bring as parents to a family is two perspectives. And in our case, a man and a woman perspective. And both of those are so valuable. So I really be around their father. And I just knew good stuff would come from that. And it did. In fact, we were talking to one of our second daughter, and she was describing this experience to me, and we were homeschooling and we spent a lot more hours together, but she described moving aboard the boat as when dad came home. Mm. And that, I think that really surprised you, but yeah, it was really putting family first, experiences over stuff. Experiential learning. We wanted to do things hands-on, see, hear, smell, taste, touch things for ourselves. We have a list of our top 10 family values. And one of them is that Ortons discover things and explore. And one of them is that we try to solve problems. So I think those were in there, and those were really important to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know that we went into this with any kind of parenting checklist of things that we were hoping to accomplish. Sure. But I think we just knew that this was going to be a comprehensive experience that was going to have all kinds of positive effects. And Emily's right. You know, I think that if you really want to feel close to somebody, you got to go through something hard together. And
It was a lot harder than we expected.
And, you know, when we got out there, we definitely had what we've come to call dreamer's remorse, where you actually get what you want and you make happen what you want to have happen. And then the first couple weeks on the boat, we just asked ourselves, did we just do the dumbest thing in our lives? Did we just make the worst decision of our lives? Because it was hard. But working through that as a couple and as a family, I think has ultimately really given us something that I don't know how else we would have gotten it.
Yeah.
But we got it and I'm grateful for it.
That's awesome. So a couple of things. First, I wanted to share a line that you, Emily, had said in the book that relates to this, because you were describing your experience of getting off the boat to go snorkeling for like the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw all these amazing sights and you saw this awesome, and you finally caught up to Eric where they'd gotten ahead of you. And Eric says to you, are you ready to go back? And you said, not really. And snorkeling is my new favorite thing. And then you said, what other favorites were hiding inside my fears? And that's so profound. It's like, how many times do we, shy away from things because we aren't willing to risk what good could come out of it. And so that relates to what we're saying. I think that that's a really, really awesome line to think about. Like, what else is hiding inside my fears? What else can I do to step out of my comfort zone in order to grow? And then also, this relates to this idea of having to do something hard in order to grow as a family. I just had this conversation with my parents, and the last episode I just posted is about this idea that a lot of times we grow through a crisis, but at the same time, that's not ideal, right? We don't want a crisis to bring our family together, but we can at the same time create things that allow us to grow. It doesn't have to be as extreme as getting on a boat for a year, but it could be something like you said, like preparing for whatever you're doing to create. Like you said, Eric, you talked about being part of a production that helped you bond with the people that you worked with, or preparing for a mountain climbing project, outing and things like that. Anything that challenges you will help you to bond as a family or the relationships that you want to grow. And I think that that's something that's really important, because like, I think we get caught up in this comfort zone. We get caught up in our fears, and even I think that it can lead to, from my experience, my husband and I, after living in, I told you, we had a hard time living in Northern Virginia for 8 years, and we actually really fell into a depression. And I've started to learn and realize that it's doing things that challenge us to grow and having some kind of a goal, whatever it may be, is something that really has helped me to bring me out of that, is because it's helped me to realize what is hiding behind my fears, and also, allowed me to see what my capacity is and push me to do something more to get me out of that. And I think that that's something that's really important, that I hope that people understand, that if you are in a situation where you're going, our family is not thriving, what am I afraid of? And to start challenging those fears. So I appreciate you guys sharing this thought and your experience of overcoming those, because it's inspiring and it's helpful to people who are caught in their fears. But at the same time, we don't have to reach as far as going out and doing something quite so extreme, but there are things that we can do to challenge the status quo, to challenge our fears in order to reach up and grow.
As you were talking, it made me think of how my growing up years. And because I never did this with my family, my dad never took us out on a boat. But I remember my dad would say, hey, we're gonna build a deck, and Eric, I need your help. And I got close to my dad through, digging footer holes and mixing cement and cutting and measuring, measuring and cutting 2x10s and in the hot Virginia summers. And, and yet even now, 30 years later, I go home and I get to hang out with my kids and my parents and Emily, and we have beautiful times sitting on that deck, you know, and we make memories now, and I can take pride in having helped my dad build it. And so I think you're onto something, because the goal of our book is not to encourage everybody to go buy a sailboat and take their family out. Mm-hmm. No, that's not for everybody. But I think each person, each couple, each family can think of something, or just, you know, or sort of discover within their own interests what's going to be the good thing for their family. It doesn't have to be a year. It doesn't have to be outdoorsy even. I think, you know, it's just going to be something that requires everyone in the family to dig deep, because, you know, within themselves, and to support each other, and to do something that feels beyond their reach. And when you do that as an individual, and when you help each other as a family do that, something pretty marvelous happens. But it's going to be, I think it should be unique to each family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Each family is unique.
Yeah. Well, and that's totally my message about family culture, is that, you know, every family is different. Every family is going to have different values. Every family is going to have something that is hard for them. You know, it might be something that's as simple as making sure that you consistently get up and exercise every morning together, or read scriptures together every day. You know, those kinds of things. If you set a goal to do something that is different than what you've done before, that challenges you, then that's how you grow. You have to commit to that, and you have to stick to that goal of whatever it could be. And it could be something like doing service projects every week, or to learn a new skill, or, you know, it could be anything along those lines that are going to help in your family to thrive and to grow and to bond in that way. So I really appreciate your guys' example, and you're sharing your message and your story, so that we can see, you know, I think that if the more we see other people, like, 'cause that third element of having the support, and, you know, knowledge, faith, and support, that also comes from seeing other people overcome their obstacles and learning from their experiences and overcoming their fears. So that's what I'm grateful to have you guys on here, to be able to share your experience, to be able to talk about this stuff, and to share and spread the message of what you're doing, so that we can draw more people to learn about what you're doing, so that we can learn from your examples too. Because it's like you said in the book that you were reading other people's blogs and they were sailors and things like that. You know, we don't have to become sailors, but we can learn and see how your family is growing and relate to that in the goals that we have for our own families. So any final thoughts that you wanted to share with our audience before we conclude?
Well, I think I'd love to second what you were just saying. I think when we have an opportunity to see how integral failure is to success, we never get tired of that story. When my kids were first taking ice skating lessons, they were so self-conscious and clinging to the edge. We happened to be taking at this rink in New Jersey where pre-Olympic skaters were practicing in the rink next door. And I took them over there. I was like, look at these pre-Olympic skaters. Watch them fall on their rear ends again and again and again. Anytime you are pushing your edge, you are going to be falling. So if you're falling, then you know you're progressing.
Yeah,
you're growing. So I feel like in our book, I think some of the things that I'm most excited about is showing us belly flop over and over again on our way to success. And just say, like, if you're in that situation where you're striving for something, you see, yep, this is normal. Back to the drawing board, back to the drawing board, back to the drawing board. And when you know it's normal, it's not so scary.
There's something kind of fun about watching other people belly flop, but it also gives us the courage to dive off of cliffs that we probably never would have dove. What's the word there? Dove ourselves. So yeah, I think, you know, find those mentors and look to each other for encouragement and support, and let's not be afraid to make fools of ourselves. We may just stumble into the things that bring us the greatest joy.
Yeah.
Awesome. Absolutely. Thank you. So where can we find you and your book and follow your blog and things like that and social media?
Well, we're so excited. Our book actually gets released to the public the first week of March in 2019. So it's available for pre-order now at a variety of sites, but you can find it most easily at the book website is the word 7@sea.com, and the blog is called Fezziwig, named after our boat Fezziwig, and it's spelled in a strange way, Fezziwig, Fezziwig.com, Fezziwig on Facebook, and that's mostly where we are.
And we have personal sites, but you can find it all there at 7@sea.com, and links to everything else.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time, and thank you for being here, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jody. It was so fun talking to you.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, Jody, and thanks for all the good things you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. I love getting your feedback. You can like, rate, and share on your favorite broadcasting medium or social media platform. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Family Culture Podcast, and on Twitter at _FamilyCulture. Come check out my show notes and resources at homeandfamilyculture.com. Thanks again for listening. Mother Teresa once said, "If you want to change the world, go home and love your family."